demon, the animal that spread the semen, the cannibal sign of the heathen who's eating meat and no vegan. But I get my fees and I'm reaching for the decent skis and a piece of the frequent bees that a freaking be heathen cheesing. They want the dark night, they want a bar fight, hard bites. Art is the smartest thing in the scarred life. Women is our vice, they staring at our eyes. Matter what's under tar lights, but I hit in the car twice. They want the killer clown, they want the miller sound. Gorilla that pill you for
scrolling. Hello and welcome to episode 47 of the I Want More Comics podcast. I'm Richie.
I'm Sean.
I'm Zach.
Hey, got in there.
Sucker.
Well, let's get started with the news.
So, just want to talk really quickly. A little movie came out this past week called Wonder Woman.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. And, well, that's going to really mess up the segment.
Oh, it was good.
I was going to say, what's your guys' quick review? You know, we don't need to get into it, but what did you guys overall think about it?
I thought it was excellent. It's one of the movies that, after I get done watching it, I want to see it immediately again. And, I mean, as a DC enthusiast, I would say that I wanted it to be good.
Psychotic fanboy.
And it exceeded my expectations. So I did go in with lowered expectations, scared for the DCEU as a whole, and I think that with this, I think we solidified a lot of at least the viewership that it can happen. What about you, Sean?
I liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. You should go see it. If you haven't seen it yet, then if you're like one of our other customers we were talking to today and you're just putting off seeing it because you're kind of curmudgeonly and you decide you're just not going to watch any movies again, then you're just hurting yourself.
I agree. Yeah, just, I wouldn't, it's unfortunate, but if you didn't like Batman vs. Superman or Suicide Squad, I still think that there's a good chance you're going to love Wonder Woman.
In any of these movies, any of these comic book related or movies in general, you should go in with the attitude of, hey, I'm either going to like it or I'm not. That's fine. It's its own entity. It's not, you can't base, like you were talking about, a lot of people are like, well, it's going to kill the entire DC universe if this is bad. That's just, you're just being dumb. It's its own movie. They're all their own movies. You base them on those merits. You don't base it on what other movies came before it.
Yes. I agree. I really enjoyed it. I loved it. It really harkened back to me. Not story-wise or anything like that, but the feelings I got while watching Wonder Woman were the same kind of things that I got while watching the original Christopher Reeve Superman. Some of the beats in the Wonder Woman movie are that same. We're going to go with this with so much earnest truth. We're going to talk about her being the god of, you know, somebody who loves people and who inspires people. And we're not going to shy away from that. We're not going to make it weird or dark or edgy. Just like in the 70s, Superman, how cool is this when he shows up and flies, and how cool is it when Wonder Woman kicks some butt and does it while inspiring people, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. But I think you should go out and see it if you are trying to, you know, like Sean said, you're trying to say, oh, how's it going to stack up with the other stuff?
Well, I don't think... If you go into any of these movies just pre-hating them, then you're setting yourself up to be disappointed in the first place anyway.
Yeah. So I mean, I definitely say go out there, see it, and if you really don't like it and you haven't liked anything else that DC's done, then you may not be a DC fan.
Right.
Which is possible as well.
I do have a complaint to the movie.
Yeah.
There should have been more of her kneeing people through windows.
Agreed.
There wasn't enough knees through windows.
Agree on that completely. I think that they could even use more action, which is almost ridiculous to say. But I could watch
that. That is actually the only problem I had with it.
There's so much character development. What's going on there?
Just come on.
Yeah, no, push that to the side.
Punch
people through windows. That's all I want. Punch that guy in the face.
Yeah. All right. So next up, I wanted to talk to Richie about this.
Oh, fine. Just cut me out of the loop.
No. I want to hear Sean's opinions about this too. But Tom King was recently in an interview, and he said that Batman is going to reveal his biggest secret to Catwoman in this current story arc that's going on right now.
Yeah.
So, and what could that be? Right. It said that no one else in the universe knows what his secret is. So, what can that be?
He doesn't like spiders.
Okay.
I said that he was going to wear women's lingerie to feel powerful.
Okay.
You got to do what you got to do, bro.
You got to do.
And
that's a pretty big secret.
I keep that from I think it has to tie in with the button and what's been going on.
I mean,
with the storyline there.
So my serious answer to him was it was probably along the lines of something that he had an epiphany during the button.
Pre-spoiler alert.
Right. If you haven't listened to our podcast and everything else yet. It has probably something to do with the concept of why he is or doesn't want to be Batman. He could either A, go with his father and his choice of, you know, don't do this for us, or B, kind of recognizing himself that he never was doing it for his parents.
He was doing it for himself.
Correct. So those, again, are just ideas. We don't know the answer to this. We're just kind of throwing out our thoughts.
Maybe he's got multiple personality disorder.
Maybe he is Two-Face.
I'm just saying.
Or like all of his villains are actually just symptoms.
There you go.
Yeah,
we can do that. Or that he's always loved Catwoman. Oh.
Me too.
Yeah. So
stole my heart along with those jewels.
Exactly. And then, of course, always we do the spiel here every week. We do a stream sale every Friday night.
I'm so enthused about it.
We do a stream
6 to 8 p.m. Fridays. Yeah.
Yes. Every Friday night from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time.
That's right.
Well, and this last week was crazy.
Yeah, so this past week
we got two small but decent book buys.
Yeah.
And that lit that stream on fire.
Not only that, but during the stream itself, we had buys happening in the store, and those were transferring to the stream sale.
Keith ran in and was like, I got stuff!
And we
it's
were
that
like,
quick.
Here we go. Yep, and I bought a collection that came in at noon, and it was up there, first shot on there. So how do you check this out? Just go to our Facebook page. You'll see the past ones in our video section. Every Friday, it'll go live, so like our Facebook page if you don't already. And just check us out. It's really simple, really easy. We have a lot of fun, Richie and I, and we explain how to do it and all that stuff in some videos. And
that's correct. It's the easiest night, way to get comic books out there today. You just have to watch us on Facebook and say, I want that.
Yeah, pretty much.
And just say that you want more comics.
And that's it.
Pretty much. And then we also do a I Want More Comics book club. We meet at the last Thursday of every month. So month it's going to be June 29th.
Right before Comic-Con.
Right before Comic-Con.
Yeah, crazy.
No. 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m.
Right.
And this month's book is going to be Mystery Men.
Marvel's Mystery Men.
By David Liss and Patrick Zercher. We have some copies. We're actually sold out at this exact moment of recording, but I think we're getting some tomorrow.
I was going to say, by the time you hear this, we'll definitely have some.
But I mean, it's gone super popular quick, which has been awesome.
Right, which hopefully will be a really big turnout and a lot of discussion about a lot of people discussing a really great comic, and you can see Zach and I put on our smiles like we're not completely freaking out about Denver Comic Con.
That'll be fun. So
I don't even know if I'll be here.
I don't know. I think you'll be setting up.
I don't really know.
Because it will be that Thursday. So we'll see. Maybe. It depends on how well Wednesday goes.
If we have to go Wednesday and set up, and then Thursday might turn into sit down there all day just so people don't steal our stuff.
Uh-huh.
I don't know yet. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. So, all right.
Excellent. So let's go from that to picks of the week.
Excellent. Who wants to go first?
I'm going to start off.
Excellent.
Because I really want to talk about this. I can't remember if we talked about it with the first issue or not.
I don't think we did.
Because I know you and I really enjoy this book, but it's Action Labs, Spencer and Locke.
It's good.
And it caught me off guard. One day, Sean was reading one of his PDFs.
And I don't know how they're not getting sued for this, but it's a really cool concept.
Yes.
It's kind of piggybacking off of... Calvin and Hobbes.
I looked over Sean's shoulder and he was like, dude, you have to see this. And it was kind of like the illustration style of Calvin and Hobbes. And it was just the most terrible noir, like trailer trash noir is how I'd describe it. Just a detective dealing with really grotesque stuff. But it was your typical redhead who could or could not be considered Calvin. But we'll call him Spencer at this point. Spencer, and he he has a stuffed animal named Locke. It's a little cat. And he believes that it's his imaginary friend, and they go on adventures together, except for these...
All adventures being that he's, like, a detective.
Right. So he's grown up, and now he's a detective, and Locke is still his best buddy, and they've just been through stuff.
He's his partner, doing detective stuff in the real world.
So it's essentially just taking Calvin and Hobbes, i.e. Spencer and Locke, and putting them into a universe where he's might be just a little crazy
and an adult
and put him into kind of like a Sin City-esque storyline.
Solving crimes.
There's some brutality to it. This is issue number 2 that I'm suggesting you pick it up and read the series, but number 2 has some really good stuff. He pulls out a like a mallet, and he says that he wants to play what he calls convict ball, which is him essentially doing an interrogation process on a convict with just various items like hockey sticks and tennis rackets and things. Mm-hmm. And he was like,
so this might be a wee bit darker.
Yeah, it's definitely not for kids. I guess I should mention that. It's not family friendly. This is for the adults in the group. And I would say it's for people that have read Calvin and Hobbes that enjoy that kind of... Because there's several throwbacks. Like convict ball is obviously Calvin ball, where Calvin would create his own rules, and he says he creates his own rules. And the thing about convict ball is that he never loses, and that's the same thing. And you never play the same way twice. So, just really cute and awful things all at the same time. So, it's a fun nostalgic trip and has great detective. There's a mystery going on as well in the story. So I don't want to like undersell that. Excellent writing. This is a David Propose, and I enjoy the writing. I think it's great, and the artwork, whenever they go into a memory, it's kind of done in the Calvin and Hobbes feel, and I enjoy that as well. So Jorge Santiago Jr. is that's my pick. I think even if that slightly interests you, you should give it a shot. See if you
like
it.
I've been picking this up because my girlfriend, she loves Calvin and Hobbes. She has one of the only comic book things that she's owned is a hardcover collection of all those.
Right.
And I told her about that, and she thinks it's awesome, so I'm picking those up. So, yeah, like you said, Calvin and Hobbes, fans, I think, would really dig that.
Yeah.
You got the names wrong.
Did I?
Locke is the detective.
Uh-huh. And Calvin and Hobbes.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, I dig that. I picked that book up as well. Sean, what about you?
The only book I read that I actually last week was the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have much to add because...
Okay. It was a fifth week, so it was a small week.
There wasn't a ton of stuff that came out last week, so...
But sure. Him and I are just giggling over all these little jokes in here. There's one where there's like they're in a street race,
uh-huh,
and he's talking about how these guys have moves, and he was like, but then again, so do I, and he goes into a flashback of him on a wagon.
That's awesome.
Like I said, I don't understand how he hasn't been sued yet.
Yeah.
Maybe he asked for permission, hopefully.
I mean, they could have got...
I don't know.
And parody it's
definitely an homage to something, right. You could tell he had a serious fondness for, even if he didn't get permission. Well,
yeah, that's what I wanted to say, too.
But, it's
you can tell this guy read some Calvin and Hobbes and really enjoyed it. Yeah,
a lot. Times.
And just thought, like, what if I put it in the worst case scenario? What if you never got rid of your best friend?
Yeah, I like it. I dig it.
What do you got?
All right, so what I have is I actually have a book. I have an actual book this time. Mm. What came out last week was the book 100 Things Spider-Man Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die by Mark Giannacchio.
Stop reading Spider-Man.
So, no.
No, that's not it. No.
Sorry.
Mark Giannacchio.
100 times.
I apologize if I am I'm messing up the name. He is one of the co-hosts of a Spider-Man podcast that I listen to on the regular. Mm-hmm. And he was tasked by a book company to write this book. And... to support him, I wanted to check it out. And I think it's a really cool book for people who, if you're into Spider-Man, It's 100 things, so it's a, I think it's like 300 to 400 pages, something like that. And they all have, there's 100 things, it's the entire thing about it. And they, you know, he tells you different stories, different trivia things, you know, and some of the stuff is things that people who are Spider-Man fans already know. But the way he writes it is that he writes from a point of passion. So it's not a, it's not an encyclopedia. It's not a source book where they go, oh, in Amazing Spider-Man 50, that's when the Kingpin appeared. Next page. No, it's, you know, he does a little bit of a write-up of everything. He goes, isn't this awesome? And this was cool because of this, and he later used in Daredevil, and you know, so he always writes kind of as a fan perspective of Spider-Man.
Okay.
So I really dug it. I think that if you are a huge Spider-Man fan, you'll enjoy the writing on it. You'll enjoy the passion behind it. If you are not, then this is perfect for you. If you're getting excited about the Homecoming, you know, movie. If you're wanting to, you know, check out Spider-Man or didn't know where to go, where to start with, this is going to be really good for you because it'll give you the basics and you can talk to diehards about, you know, certain storylines and things like that.
So it'll kick you, kickstart you from noob to Zach.
I don't know if it'll go like that, but it will. It'll go from noob to I don't know.
Just a little lower, Zach. What will it do for the person that is not a Spider-Man fan? And, well, me.
What does it do for Sean?
Nothing, because
I disagree. So, Sean, what you could do with this book is you could actually keep a lot of your magazines from flying
around. Or what Zach has told me before on a book I liked that he hated, I could just tear the pages out of it and give it to a bum so they can stay warm in the winter.
Correct.
I'm sure it's a great book.
Yeah, what's the hate of Spider-Man?
I like Spider-Man. I think it...
Oh, I think everybody pretty much knows I'm not a big Spider-Man fan.
I understand. but you understand, but you don't like love Superman either. But every single time Spider-Man comes up in this podcast, you go...
Not every single time.
Oh, I wonder if it was Bert. Yeah, well, that would read. Stop. Who cares? I like Spider-Man. The people, and I know people you who know, like Spider-Man, you like, have talked about it in the store like soccer, because they listen too. To our...
And there's a problem with that.
Because they listen to our podcast.
You're like
Godzilla? You know who you guys are.
Like,
yes.
You know these things are all bad for
so,
you, Zach.
So, hey, and also, I'm going to... and also, I'm friends with this guy on
Zach, I love you,
Twitter and stuff, and I'm going to get him to listen to this.
Right.
So, Mark, I love you. Keep doing your stuff.
Hey, I love you, too.
Yeah, get paid, bro. Sean loves you.
Get money.
Except for his hate of Spider-Man.
I want to like Spider-Man.
Of things
you,
we
you
like.
Love Spider-Man. You love Spider-Man enough for the both of us. How
that's
about
right.
That?
I do. I think enough.
So for then I'm
of us,
I'm actually. Just retired from that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I think that's good.
You broke my heart too many times, Zach. I'm sorry. Broke my heart.
I think instead of focusing on what you dislike, we should move on to what you actually like.
And I don't like anything.
That should lead us into spinning the racks.
What? Is that all the news you got?
News? We're on pick six.
Or whatever that
Where
was
are you
called.
At?
I don't know.
We're on pick. Now we're at spinning the rack.
Spinning the racks. Da-da-da, 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 da-da-da. Spinning the racks.
And so what's our spinning the rack topic tonight?
Zach just took a huge sigh, like, oh.
I love making him crazy. Look at his eyes.
It's just, I see it.
He's nuts, dude.
They're twigging out.
This is the podcast. This is the one where he's going to smash that bottle and just swing at you.
He's
got
to get to 50 at least before he, like, stabs him with the bottle.
That's crazy. It's just one of those things where every time I want to talk about Spider-Man on this show, I go, I don't know if I can because I'm just going to hear a rap.
No, you can totally talk about Spider-Man.
No. Every time.
No, talk away. I don't care.
Yeah, we had a That's whole fine. Thing about Venomverse.
We did.
Remember? Podcast.
And then this one in the corner is going, if you like to read that stuff.
Well, that's true based on everything.
That is true.
I see your anger, and I just...
love it. Your anger tastes so good to me.
So
it's amazing.
For spinning the racks, we decided to... kind of, especially
Spider-Man's
from our...
great.
Yeah, Spider-Man is great. Especially from the last podcast, after we had all the girls in, we were kind of talking about why they didn't consider themselves good enough to get on the podcast. Every single one of them said, well, I'm not sure I know.
Well, that was
enough.
An interesting response.
Yeah.
I'm not a good enough geek.
Right.
To be on your podcast.
That,
it's like, what?
What? So that brought up the question of, like,
it. Everybody has a passion for what they're what they want to either collect or what they want to read or what they want to look at or what they want to watch. Or you have your passions. Everybody's got, unless you're dead inside.
Yeah,
mine's just not Spider-Man.
Right,
but everybody's got their passion.
That's true. And so what I thought we could do is we could.
So for the 50th episode, Zach's gonna stab me.
That's live. Don't forget
that. I think
that.
It's happening.
Yeah. The Spider-Man fans will help me.
Yes. So what I've decided is we expand outside of our comic book persona and kind of bring to the table things that we're also geeky about.
Yes.
So things that we've taken outside of the world that you guys know us in and kind of something we love to embrace when we get home and...
Yeah, stuff we don't talk about on the podcast
that
normally.
That may possibly not really even fit within our podcast, and that's fine.
Sure.
So today it's going to get a little weird as we talk about other passions outside that.
Yeah, but...
So
but,
is that like the passion of like curling up in the shower and crying while the water's
if you do that every day and you have like some sort of collective sense of doing it...
Oh, God,
like you need
time.
To collect if you need
so
to
good.
If you need to collect like the bars of soap that you've cried over, then
that's
cool.
How all
I guess
the tears
so.
Come out
okay,
from the stress
fine.
Of the day.
No, but like you said, with like when Erica was here,
right?
And she was like, "Oh, I'm not really."
She's like,
a geek.
"I dig Barbies."
Yeah, and I dig Barbies, and I have a lot of them, and we spent some money on some Barbies. Everybody.
So if her Barbies fought your Godzillas, who would win?
Godzillas. They would eat them. Come on.
But how many Barbies does she have compared to your Godzillas?
Well,
if there was a Barbie versus Godzilla fight here,
who would have the bigger army?
Yeah,
who'd
have the bigger army?
Oh, the bigger army would probably be the Barbies.
Ah,
I think there. Yeah, I think there's way more Barbies produced than there's ever been.
Well, probably.
But she collect all these, and she's like, I don't know if I'm geeky enough. You have a full-blown collection of Barbies.
You have a lifelong collection of Barbies at your house. I'm pretty sure you're geeky for something.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's get into that. Zach, why don't you open up to us, because you're doing so good with... I mean, might as well just keep rolling it through.
Yeah, roll it through, Zach. Let's talk about some positive Spider-Man love here.
It's not Spider-Man. It's because that's still comics. One of the things that since I was a kid, one of my biggest passions, in fact, I think probably I'm up there with movies, comics. My passion for Godzilla stuff is pretty big from a young age.
Well, would you say that Godzilla kind of slid you into all the other mediums, though?
Probably, yeah.
Because I know that he's represented in comic books and movies and things like that.
Yep. I mean, when I was a small kid,
for a few days.
Yeah. When I was a small kid, child. I mean, we're talking. I mean, I had to have been.
Give me
five.
A little Zach voice.
No, I was five. I remember going in to a Walmart.
Can I get a Godzilla?
I remember going into a Walmart and my aunt buying me a Godzilla King of the Monsters, that's the 1956 version with Raymond Burr, on VHS.
Right.
And I watched that and I got super crazy into it. And what I mean by that, and people will remember this if you're not, you know, you remember these stores, but Suncoasts were around in malls. And we would call up different Suncoasts around Colorado.
Dude.
And we would.
Yeah, have you ever met Obsessive Compulsive Zach when he starts eating something and he suddenly has to own all of it in 5 minutes?
And so we would.
Have you ever met that, Zach? You'll love this.
Because my stories have Suncoast in it as well.
Oh, so, very nice.
I remember Suncoast.
So, back then, in the late 90s, mid 90s too, you couldn't just buy all the Godzilla movies if you just wanted to.
Right.
You had to hunt them down. One Suncoast and Fort Collins had one.
This was like before the advent of the internet taking
correct,
over the world.
Yeah, exactly.
And making stuff available to everybody worldwide. Basically.
So I would hunt these
things
down.
Like a stream sale.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
So I would hunt these things down, and my mom, awesomely enough, would go buy these for me. And they were expensive back then. This is back in the day when VHS's were like $35-$40 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So we bought tons of them. And then whenever Walmart re-released them or whatever, we would get those. I remember I had a suitcase that I just kept all my Godzilla movies in, and I would just carry them around whenever. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I loved that. It was super big for me when I was
popular.
Yeah. And then what was really funny was I got out of it probably around middle school.
Uh-huh.
And then through middle school, high school, and many years past high school, I didn't...
You just ghosted on Godzilla?
Yeah, I just ghosted on it. And I went, all huh. Right. And then a couple years ago now, I actually went...
He's basically regressed, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
Back to his childhood.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of went, hey, oh, yeah, it was because of the new Godzilla movie, Shin Godzilla, that just came out.
I was going to say the actual...
Yeah, the new Japanese movie.
So the 99 one did not... bring you back to your Godzilla love?
Well, I mean, that was in the height when the 98, the Matthew Broderick one.
Yeah.
Which isn't, yeah, I mean, we don't like to talk about that one.
What?
But,
that was a good Godzilla movie. I enjoyed it.
It was an iguana. But anyway, so with the new Godzilla movie coming out in Japan, I went, you know what?
You didn't like Ferris Bueller's version of Godzilla?
It's a good kaiju movie. Yeah, it's just not just a good Godzilla movie. Don't blow over
it,
man. Movie.
Let's talk about it.
We can. We can get that. Because that's another thing is that I've also become a big fan of kaiju movies, too, and not just Godzilla. When I was a kid, it was just Godzilla. I didn't really care. But now I've been getting into Gamera and King Kong.
What was that Mass movie?
Which one?
The Mass one. What was it called?
The Host?
No, the big robots that had to fight kaiju.
Oh, yeah, Pacific Rim?
Pacific Rim.
I love that movie. Yeah. I thought that movie was awesome. So a couple of years ago now, I saw the trailer for that, and I said, "Oh, I wonder what's going on there. You know, is there still a community for that?" And I found out, whoa, there was a huge community about it.
You have a bunch of friends that can be crazy. You can be crazy with. Yes. They're already crazy.
This is the thing about the internet that brings this geekiness like to a. Mm-hmm. You can almost flourish in it, and you can find anybody that likes what you like.
If you need to go find some enablers to make your craziness not seem crazy, right. You can go do that.
Absolutely.
So I found out, and I went on Amazon, and I found out that I could buy pretty much every single movie, mm-hmm. So I did in one go.
Told you.
You did.
I own every single Godzilla movie on Blu-ray or DVD except for two of them.
You don't know Zach until you've seen him go through a phase.
Except for two of them. The two are now out of print and they're worth like $200 each, which I...
You're not a real fan.
Which I'm going to wait for them to reprint or something like that. But then I found out about, when we started carrying them here in store, which is pretty cool, is X-Plus figures. They're highly articulated, highly detailed, vinyl from Japan of the different monsters, the different Godzillas, and I never knew about them until a couple years ago, and that blew up where I'm like, wow, they're really cool. They are
bendy as all get out.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy crap. I got to mess around with one because we got a few of them in a trade.
Yeah.
And Sean and I were making them do like gang signs and screaming.
Of course, of course. So it's one of the things I don't talk about a ton.
Yeah.
But I absolutely love it. It's I have a whole section in my house.
I love all the collection talk. So real quick, tell me why Godzilla? Like what sparks your imagination to him? Why does it reach you?
Because when he's a kid, he only had like Channel 12, and that's all they ever showed. Saturday mornings, they would show these kaiju movies.
Is this a sad story?
No, I don't think it's a sad thing.
No, it's true, though. I was poor, too. I did not have the Godzilla love like good old Zach here does, right. Because I watched those movies, and I was like, I don't know why I'm watching this movie. But they spoke to him and reached into the passion in his heart for giant lizard freak things.
I think there's a different combination of all of it. When I was a kid, Mothra, and I saw when I saw the Showa era stuff, mm-hmm. the stuff from the 60s and 70s, uh-huh. where it was a little bit more goofy, right. It was just goofy fun. The original movie, the Raymond Burr version and the Japanese version, are such great metaphors for the atomic bomb, because that's what he started out as.
Right.
He became a cool fighting monster lizard that threw... fire out of his mouth and like jumped around and fought other monsters later when it became super popular and you know, just like things do, people go, hey, let's have him dancing. Which did happen. Right. And when it got Godzilla movies. But the original one was killing kids and children and having them be destroyed just like the atomic bomb did. Right. That one and Godzilla 1985 and the new one that just came out, the Shin Godzilla, are all about that, about how nature doesn't care about you. They don't care about what kind of day you're having. They don't care about if you deserve it or not. You know, it just happens.
Interesting.
And that's kind of the whole basis of Godzilla. The beginning was, you know, they just, it was 10 years after they got bombed in World War II, uh-huh. and they were still dealing with, you can't walk in this part, people dying from radiation, people being deformed because of the, just horrible stuff that scarred a psyche of an entire country. And how they dealt with it is they made this monster movie. And
I went on to inspire Rampage, the video game, which is amazing because you can be the lizard and beat up the building,
so,
eat the people.
So I've always loved Japanese culture. So I've always loved watching the movies and seeing the different way they take storytelling,
the way they run.
Sure, and just something about Godzilla's. He has, at least definitely in the later ones, he just has a personality that I really dig. It's an interesting thing because I've never known my life of not loving Godzilla. I remember right. being a little kid and loving Godzilla. Why did I love him the first time I saw him? I don't honestly know, but
well, it could just be a fantasy thing, man. It's like, just grasp on to that.
Yeah, something about the destruction and the fun.
Get wrecked.
Yep.
Rick, little people.
Yeah. So
Tiny Zach's like die.
Yeah. Exactly. So, if there are any Godzilla fans out there. I was going to do my top five really quick, because the one person out there who's a Godzilla fan might be jumping up and down. The original Godzilla, Godzilla 1985, mm-hmm. Godzilla vs. Biollante. It would probably be Godzilla vs. Mothra, and then I would probably put... it's going to be kind of hard. I probably would do Godzilla versus Destroyer in there. So those are like the top five favorite movies. There's 30 movies too, by the way. So there's a lot.
Excellent.
Yeah.
See, there you go. Peek in. That
was that your only thing? That's your biggest thing?
We just chose one thing. I mean,
I'm curious.
What's something that you actively collect? I mean, just today. As of this recording, I spent $200.
I watched him.
Seen it.
On a Godzilla. Previous
exclusive.
On a Godzilla figure that just came in.
Yeah.
And I just paid back some of our customers that were awesome enough for when they went to Japan. They picked me up a Blu-ray of Shin Godzilla.
Right.
I paid them back.
It looks awesome, too.
Yeah, it's very cool. So, I mean, I'm a fan.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's So I was just trying to think about something that I... you know, actively try and collect, and I definitely collect Godzilla stuff and kaiju movies and stuff
excellent
regularly. So
alright, Sean, why don't you open us up into your world?
It's dark in here.
I know it's dark in there. But I know you collect other things.
They'll just, you know, the tears of my
your enemies.
No, actually my first love, even before comic books, even before everything, was vinyl records.
Right.
So I've been buying records since I was 8.
Uh-huh.
And there was a store called Don's Discs that used to be here that was in Thornton, Colorado.
Right.
Loved that store because the guy had, it was a massive store, and he had just crazy records. I mean, he would... get buys all the time in, and just, you know, I think he started out as a jukebox store. So he was selling jukeboxes right. and 45s, because like his 45 collection in the store was something like 250,000 45s at the time. It was ridiculous.
That's insane.
So that is crazy. Yeah, he started out in a smaller store selling jukeboxes and then some records, and then it just kind of, the records took over. And this is like when I was, we're pretty young. Like when I was first going to a store, it was a smaller location, and he still had jukeboxes,
right?
Yeah, which was crazy. Like when you're a kid, to see jukeboxes that for sale, and you put it in your house, and okay,
sweet.
So, but yeah, I started out buying records first, and I was pretty poor when I was young.
Uh-huh.
So, if my mom ever listens to this, she's probably gonna hit me.
Yeah,
but sorry, Mom. Like what little money she had to give me for lunches, right. I would pocket that.
Right.
And at the end of the week, I would go buy records.
Classic the money.
Right.
And she would, like, I would go to Don's, and he would always look at me and be like, "Did you eat lunch this week?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, I totally ate lunch." He's like, "I don't know if you're telling me the truth. What if I ask your mom?" I'm like, "Well, my mom doesn't come here." I would have to say stuff to make it so, you know, he wouldn't ask my mom if I was eating lunch, because I obviously wasn't.
So, what albums were, like, your first
first albums I ever bought, yeah. like on vinyl.
Yeah, because you said you've been buying since 8, so I'm super interested to see what a 10-year-old buys on vinyl.
So, because I was buying tapes before. No, it wasn't Ron Stewart.
I know, I'm just kidding.
First concert I ever saw.
Yeah.
But no, the very first things that I can remember buying on vinyl, I bought a copy of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars.
Okay.
David Bowie. I was 8.
right. Yeah.
AC/DC for those about to rock.
Nice.
And Pink Floyd's The Wall. Excellent.
So, this were is you eight. 8 or I was, 17 I in
was,
the 70s?
I was 8.
Okay. So,
and then, like, followed shortly, I think I had Iron Maiden's Killers album. Like, right after that. Like, my tastes have always been way more mature than what I should be.
Right.
But I also had a family full of people that were either A, musicians, or B, musically inclined.
Right. Well, I know that music is a real huge passion of yours.
Oh, massively huge.
Like, yeah. Bigger you than know, anything cause, I know
like, my dad had played guitar forever. He'd sang in bands, and like his passions, I mean, he loved 70s rock, 60s, late 60s rock, you know, stuff like Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, The Doors, Jimi Hendrix, you know, Creedence Clearwater Revival. My mom liked the Doobie Brothers. My mom also liked doo-wop music from the 50s, or from the, mid-50s and into the mid-60s. Nice. You know, she liked all that kind of stuff. And then my sisters my sister Lainey loved Eddie Rabbit. Or, I mean, Eddie Money, I'm sorry.
Eddie Money, right.
But that early 80s kind of rock stuff.
That's what I'm talking about.
38 Special, you know, stuff like that. My sister Jennifer absolutely loves Rush, so I had that influence. Then my sister Chrissy liked, she liked punk music into pretty hardcore metal music. So, you know, she ended up really liking Cannibal Corpse. She loved Slayer.
Right.
She liked DRI. She liked, you know, Dead Kennedys. So I had a pretty wide selection.
Well, and that's what I would say is that I don't think you're bottlenecked into your what you like either. You're very eclectic.
No, and I'm the one who went out and hunted down hip hop, and I love hip hop. Like that era of hip hop from like 85 to about 95.
Right.
That's my favorite.
What was the show that you watched on Netflix that you keep recommending to everyone?
The Get Down?
The Get Down, that's right.
That show was actually really good. I'm sad it only went 2 seasons and now it's done because nobody watched it because nobody likes history of hip hop.
Yeah.
Because hip hop has always been like a weird disposable culture.
Yeah.
Which I never got.
Well, and you know,
because people don't go back and listen to the older stuff unless you're like me.
Sure.
But a lot of people are like, well, what's the new thing on the hip hop thing on the radio? I got to see the new next thing. And well, there's other stuff out there that's really freaking good. You should probably check out.
Yeah.
And I love new stuff. There's some of it I absolutely hate, but.
Yeah.
What's that one kid that. Lil Yachty or whatever the hell his name? He is. Terrible. That mumblecore rap stuff that people are doing is just freaking awful. But, you know, then you jump over to something like Royce da 5'9", and that guy's the shit. So, you know? But, musical taste, I'm all over the board. I'm all across everything. Yeah. And I've been buying records, like I said, since I was 8. And I bought all the way through the 90s when nobody bought records.
Right.
So people would actually give me their record collections without me buying them.
Yeah, and there's this weird...
In 94, somebody was like, hey, I've got these 500 records. You want them? I'm like, yeah.
Yes.
And they just gave me... I suddenly had a full Madonna catalog. Because
it was dead at the time.
Yeah.
And people thought it was never coming back.
I had something like... I had 70 Kiss albums at the time, Zach. 70.
Yeah.
You know what I did with them all?
You sold them.
Yeah, you know why?
Because you don't like Kiss.
I don't like Kiss.
I do like Kiss.
Me too.
But I had, like, signed... I had signed copies. But the cool thing was about that, like, people giving me the record collections, I knew where to move them.
Right.
And then I would turn that around and I would buy records I wanted.
Right.
Sure.
Well, and it's... The hilarious thing to me is you would think that because Sean says, like, I like vinyl, you're like, oh, of course you like vinyl because it's such a thing now.
It is such a thing now.
But the resurgence of records has been so weird to me.
It's so funny.
So I used to love to be able to go... I'd go to, like, Black and Red, or I'd go to Twist and Shout, or I'd go to whatever record store I was going to, right?
Right.
And I'd be like, I want this, you know, Fugazi's 13 songs on vinyl. I want this. I don't currently have it. I want it. And so back in, like, you know, mid-90s, I'd go find this record. It's $5.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't cost much of anything.
Right. It was easy.
You know, I go find that record now. It's $40. Because yes. Everybody and their mother's trying to suck up and hoover up all this vinyl.
Right.
Yep. People who've never bought it before are like, yep. I need to buy all this stuff now. And I'm like,
and in the 90s.
Dude, you're killing me here. Do you know how many times you could go to a record store and find the wall on vinyl for like $5, $10, and it wasn't a big deal?
From 92 to 98, like every day.
Everywhere. Yeah. But now you go and nobody has it, and they all want like $100 for it.
If it's original, yeah.
Yeah, it just...
And then they do repressings.
So crazy.
See, that's an interesting... Well,
but the funny thing about repressings are different because you've got to figure out where it was repressed.
Well, yeah.
And you got to figure out where the source is from.
Yeah,
because if you pick up a repress that's a digital vinyl recording, mm-hmm. like if they've pressed the vinyl from a digital recording, it sounds like crap. Because it's not from the original analog source.
So
you got to know where you're even buying.
I was going to say, is this a thing that you even had to worry about 7 years
no.
ago?
No! It was ridiculous. Because so if they were repressing vinyl, a lot of the times it was like a special edition type thing, or they would do 1,000 copies. Right. It was usually pressed in Britain, yeah. and then it was imported over here or Japan or wherever, you right. know? But there was only 2 pressing plants
right.
in America up until about... a handful of years ago.
Right.
And now, like, Jack White has his own pressing plant in his
I want to say that it's almost been about 10 years for this resurgence to really
the resurgence. The well, point. The resurgence started... It started tickling the back of people's minds in about 2008.
Yeah,
when we first opened the store...
It's about 10 years ago.
I seriously wanted to incorporate vinyl because I knew it. Right. And if we got people selling us vinyl, I could sell it. We didn't have the space for it.
Right.
We didn't have the money or the capital to start that as well as a comic book store.
Yeah, and at that time, it was still just a...
It was a breath. Yeah,
it was real. People were just barely starting to pay attention.
It was not like it is now when you go into
and then when we got the capital for it,
so
when we finally players. Had the capital to get into vinyl and the space to get into vinyl, Keith came up to me and he's like, "Hey, dude, we have the money. Do you want to start buying collections?"
Right.
And I'm like, "No." He goes, "Well, why not?" And I said, "Because there's a vinyl store, or there's a new record store popping up on every corner like a Starbucks now. And they're all going to have the exact same stuff. They're going to have all the same exact repressings. Yeah. They're not going to have the depth like an older record store like a Twist and Shout or a Black and Red's going to have. You're not going to have that depth."
Right.
So, no, I don't want to do it now.
Right.
It didn't make sense to me because I don't want to be like Second Charles and have all the reformatted stuff that everybody else has and have to charge $40 for a new record that's not worth $40.
So, and with the vinyl now, because vinyl takes on a different construction than, let's say, a digital download or... Because it's more than just music.
It's an intimate way to listen to music. So the reason I always liked records so much is I liked the size of them. I love the size of a record.
Right.
They're much bigger. If you have a decent sound system, they sound amazing. Right. I made Zach come over and listen to the Dark Side of the Moon.
Very good.
I was like, "Here, listen to this," and I turned it to 2. It goes up to 10. My receiver goes up to 10, and I have like a 70s receiver, 70s record player, and I have 2 really decent speakers. And it was crisp and clear at 2, and it was so loud you could hear it outside in the street.
You can, and the chair was rocking. I was like,
"Yeah, but how awesome did it sound having everything coming at you so clear?"
Very good. Yes.
So, and I love that. I love that sound. But for a record, I mean, it's not going to be for everybody, you know.
Yeah.
It's you have to put in the work to get the love.
Well, and you want
because when you pull out a record, you're going to pull out that record. You're going to look at the record. You're going to you have to put the record on the turntable. You have to put the needle or have a some of them have a quick start things with the button you just push. But you have to actually take the needle and put it on the record, and then when that side ends and the arm returns to the cradle, you got to go up, flip the friggin' record over. And if it's a double LP, you have 2 records you got to deal with.
How do I pause and pick just number 3?
There's actual grooves in there where you can look, where it looks like a line in the record.
Right.
You can put it right to 3.
Okay.
And drop the needle. Yes. And if you're crazy like me, because I DJed actually for a lot of years too.
Right.
Because I loved hip hop so much.
I was going to say, you turned that love into like...
Yeah, I started doing scratch DJ stuff, and I've done it in bands and that kind of stuff.
Totally.
But because I love...
Weddings. Yeah. He's available weddings.
I've DJed weddings with records.
Yes, he has. Parties. I've been there.
I've done all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But like for scratch DJ, I started doing that probably...
Doesn't he have a...
2000... About 2000. I started doing it in 97 because that's when I got my first decks. And I started experimenting with it and trying to figure out.
Right.
And I was okay at it.
Right.
But when I started picking it up and figuring out how to do it, like, I mean, that's kind of what I used to do with some of my records. I have some records I would never do that to. Like, I have probably 100 Jimi Hendrix albums. I have 100 Bowie albums, but right. I would never scratch any of that stuff. Yeah. Right. But then I have, yeah, I have like 600 hip hop albums, and some, and I have probably another 400 12-inch singles that I could actually just DJ with. And you can take bits and parts from things and scratch things and do, you know. And then now all of it you can actually have on time-coded vinyl, and you can put on a computer.
Right.
So I have my entire iTunes library I can scratch off of.
That's crazy.
Like I can do all kinds of crazy sure. stuff with my DJ
setup. How many records do you say you have?
How many records do I currently have? I don't know.
Let's go even more.
But I will tell you this. I think I have about 5,000.
Okay.
The last time I counted them,
collection. Top. Because I know you've sold some. I know you had a ton.
I think at the peak it was about 6.
Yeah.
And I think I've scaled back by about 1,000 because I started getting rid of some of them. I just didn't have the space for them. And I had doubles and triples of some of these albums. Like I said, people would give me collections and I'd end up with like 10 copies of Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen. Right. What the hell do I need 10 copies of that for?
Right.
You know, so I'd scale back some of that.
You just need one glorious one. That's all you need.
One glorious one.
Right.
So,
that's awesome.
But I mean, it is cool to kind of go now. Like I'll go record shopping now and I'll see, especially at Twist and Shout, I'll look at their wall because they have their display wall like we do with comics for their higher priced records. And I'll look at that wall and go, I own that.
There is something to be said about someone.
And I'm just like,
the masses,
oh my God,
appreciate what you appreciated. You know, there is something that feels good about like
finally, people
are kind of coming on board with what.
Well, it's been really interesting because so many people that I know that have gotten into vinyl have come up to me and been like, I want to start buying records. Where do I start? I'm like, the first thing you need to do is figure out what kind of system you want to play this on.
Right.
Do you want to just get something small and quick that's going to sound tinny and weird? Do you want to get a better system? What do you want? And that's always a daunting question because people who've bought records before ask me this question. I'm like, you've had stereo systems, bro. You should know this question. Well, you know the answer to this question.
The thing that's different now, though, to when it, I think, like I said, I'm not an expert like Sean is over here. So, but I really feel like it's become such a thing now.
I'm far from an expert. I know.
But it's become such a thing now. Back when records were prevalent and records were going and buying the newest CD at Walmart, that's the same thing it was. So people, unless they were gearheads, you know, they would go, oh, here's the record system. I want to play records. I'll go buy some records. Ta-da. I'll go buy this, and that's it. Because it was everywhere.
Right.
It wasn't, but now, like Sean's saying, there are specialty shops. There are places to find, like he said, there's different makers. You know, there's ones that use magnets and stuff. He's shown me it. It's really cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, direct drive compared to belt driven.
So when people bought records in the old days, and now they're doing it now, it's not.
Well, everybody's basically relearning what they forgot. And if you've never, like if you're a younger gentleman, like I know a few kids that are in their early 20s that are starting to get in collecting vinyl.
Uh-huh.
They've never experienced, you know, what it takes to actually play records.
Right.
But then there's older people who forgot that information.
That's crazy.
So, you know, they're 15 years removed from having a record collection and they're like, I don't know. And I still have people that give me records.
Right.
Somebody dropped me off 78s like 2 weeks ago. In 78s, you can play with a Victrola.
Right.
Or you can play with like the stereo systems in the 50s that had that speed in the top, actually the top of the head shell flipped over and you had to insert this really stabby looking needle in there.
Right.
Like that's how you played them.
Right.
And so that's even technology that's beyond me because I never really got into 78s.
No. See, like I said, so that's a perfect example of
and a 78 is how many rotations it makes around the
needle go
before in a minute. So you know.
Yes.
That's what 33 and a third is, that's what 45 is, that's how many times they rotate around.
Like it.
In a minute.
That's fantastic. All right.
Excellent. I love it.
I love it as well.
So
what about you, Richie?
I'm gonna be quick with mine. I know we don't have a bunch of time, but I kind of racked my brain, and I had told you, like, anime.
Yeah.
Because I'm really into anime. And I was thinking about, like, you guys are going to talk about these huge collections you have, and I'm not a collector. I'm not... The only thing I really collect are comic books, and even Sean has told you a couple times, like, my collection doesn't go into, like, I need every variant. I just like to have the comic books, you know? So I dove into what I really find passionate outside of pop culture, and I'm going to throw you guys a curveball.
Okay.
I absolutely love professional wrestling.
Okay.
You actually, right. We've talked about this before.
Yes.
Okay.
So, because you used to be a backyard wrestler, and I just started laughing my ass off at you.
So, the one thing about...
I'm going to crush you with this chair.
Hey, I was a wrestling fan growing up. I remember the old days of Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, right.
And,
so, I lived through what I would call probably the golden age of wrestling, and I was the perfect age for it to grasp on, but one of the things, my dad is an actual pro fisherman.
Okay.
And he desperately wanted me to be into fishing. And I turned out to be the kid that liked choir and, you know, nice. Drama club.
Choir?
And I was like, ew, fish, why? Gross. And I can't imagine how he was just so disappointed in that. And then one day he showed me wrestling, and I latched onto that like crazy. And he loved wrestling as well. So
there's a lot of theatrics in wrestling.
Super drama. And
Sure.
So... him and I both really love that.
It's testosterone soap operas.
Absolutely it is. And it's great. So, again, and it filled the fantasy stuff, you know, the Dead Man Rises, things like that, and Ricky Steamboat. And I
loved the Ultimate Warrior.
Ultimate Warrior was amazing.
Because he was a sociopath.
Right.
They play his music. He'd run down to the
shake
stage,
the ropes.
And he would jump over, and he would just like run around somebody who just totally is on a coke bender, not nail him. And then he would just run right back out of there, and he would never talk to anybody. I was like, that guy's great.
Not saying he wasn't on coke the whole time, but...
spoiler, he was.
Yeah, he was, absolutely.
But he was so lit all the time.
So, but what was your era, though? Was it the 80s? Was it the 90s?
Mine started 80s, and I followed it all the way through the 90s.
Yeah, I watched in the 80s, and I stopped watching in the 90s.
90s blew up, though. 90s was...
Yeah, I was going to say that's my era. Yeah.
Was it
my
WrestleMania 3 that was Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant?
Yes, yeah. WrestleMania 3.
Yeah, that was...
so good.
That was my jam.
I was gonna say my era was The Rock, Stone Cold, The Undertaker.
See, I was right before
Booker T.
Yes, Booker T. Five times.
I'm trying to think of who else. I'm just trying to think of my, because I loved wrestling.
Yeah, you got so many. You got X-Pac. You got Sting. You got NWO. Diamond Dallas Page. You got
That's all my stuff.
Razor Ramon.
Yep.
You have the
Monday
Heartbreak
Night,
Kid.
Monday Night Nitro, TNT.
Oh yeah,
all that. Yeah, all that stuff.
Just a huge era of wrestling, and I just grasped onto the concept. And once I learned it was fake, like in the 90s, in the WrestleMania 3 era, the world fascinated me because it was more like a carnival. They didn't want people to know that they were actually just faking it.
Sure.
They wanted to feel
were
like savages,
were a
more, and
where this is a serious
right, yeah. Like, you don't actually want to get in the ring with me because I'm crazy and I got 24-inch biceps and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
You know, and they acted like animals, and it was simply to keep the lie alive. And the promoters would pay them big money to, like, not do this. I read Hulk Hogan's... biography, and he talked about how he had the Samoan brothers, these guys that were just giant Samoans, and their whole shtick was that they were like pulled in from the island, and they were just these animal men that couldn't speak English, and really they were just like Jersey boys that, you know,
it was all fun.
Yeah, but he's driving with them, and they got pulled over, and they turned out to be, everybody was hammered drunk, and so the cop was like, what the hell, and they found cocaine. So it wasn't Hulk Hogan's cocaine, it was theirs, and he wanted them to get to admit it, but they went right into the Samoan Brothers act because they didn't want to give up that this is not a real thing. So they just started acting like psychopaths, and they ended up all going to jail because they wouldn't speak to the officers. Now,
hilarious.
I think about that in this world, and they would get shot, but like back in the day, they were just like, these crazy bastards are, you know? So
Macho Man.
In the 90s, you found out it was...
Ooh, yeah!
Bone saw is ready. Got you for 3 minutes.
That's right.
But
well, I loved Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Oh god, yeah.
They
Roddy
Live. Piper.
Well, and
They Live is the best thing ever.
Some of the best stuff ever.
That was like some of the best wrestling I've ever seen. So, that movie.
Yeah.
That fight scene was like 10 minutes of insanity.
Yeah.
Well, put on the glasses.
Well, and I think that tell me if you agree, but I think that some of the best wrestling stuff ever was during the Sting NWO.
Oh, absolutely.
Who's turning against
these
things.
And again, as a person
that
was in the 80s.
That was all soap operas.
Yeah.
Yes.
And a person that was raised in the 80s and watched Hulk Hogan and then watch him turn heel, which is bad guy.
With Kevin Nash.
I was like, oh my God, what? Like, it broke me, but.
Oh yeah, Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
And then Sting was the fighter against them.
Or Big Diesel, if you want.
Oh,
Big Sexy.
Yeah.
Anyway. Anyway.
Yes.
Point being is I found out it was fake. I ended up appreciating it even more and wanting to be a part of it and seeing that this was a crazy act that dudes would get together and try to do these circus tricks, physical, body-harming circus tricks just to please entire giant audiences. And at the time, again, huge crowds.
Sure.
Filling stadiums all the time and weekly. And so I was fascinated by it, and it took me by surprise. I bought I had every single toy, and I was so scared to show others that I had the toys that I would hide them when my friends would come over.
Funny thing is, they probably all did the same thing to you.
One of my very first friends came over. He's like, "You got any like toys?" And I was like, "I do have toys." And we like pulled them all out, and it was super exciting. Well, best day ever. But that love turned into a drive to want to do it. So I went and I did a ton of backyard wrestling, which was a huge thing in my day, where kids would do terrible things to each other in the backyards of their houses.
Same thing when I was younger.
And then
you guys videotaped it though.
Oh, we sure did.
We didn't ask too poor for to have a videotape, but we definitely hit each other with like 2x4s.
Right. But then I even took that into going into actual training, and took 3 years of professional wrestling training, and ended up in the independent circuit and wrestled locally here for a year and a half before severely injuring my spine. And there are videos of me wrestling under the name of Creeper for IDW, Independent Direct Wrestling, or something like that.
But are these on YouTube?
They're not on YouTube. I have the tapes, and I'm not showing them to you.
No, you gotta show them to me.
I don't know how those tiny hands grabbed anybody.
I don't want to talk about that.
I was a wrestling fan when I did,
however, have to hold up like a 310-pound dude. Physically, he held, and he locked onto my shoulders, but I had to, they were like, "You can just drop me whenever," and I was like, "I want to see how long I could hold him," and I held him for a good like 3.5 seconds. I was like, "Well," I walked two and then dropped him. Awesome. Everyone was like, "What the f-?" So
did you poop a little?
I wanted to, but I was again fascinated so much to the point that I did it, and it was just one of those things that set a fire within me every time I got to see it. I got to write about it. I was such a weirdo. I wrote like contracts for people that would wrestle for me in my backyard. Their parents had to sign, and it even said on there like they could die just in case. And I don't think any of them actually had their parents sign it. I think they all just forged it and gave it back to me. So, but I have that folder still, and so there you go. That's a huge passion of mine that's very outside of our comic book.
So on the
universe.
Stream sale, expect to see Rich dressed up like a wrestler.
It's not gonna happen. That was so many moons ago.
Lies.
But there is examples, three incredible examples of how your comic other book passions. Guys veer off into geekiness outside of just the comic book world or pop culture even. And that you should be able to show that to your friends and your loved ones, and they can understand that they themselves harness a geeky energy that they're just not labeling yet. So if you're asked to be on this podcast, don't ever say, "I don't know if I'm geeky enough," or "I just
trust me, you've got a passion for
something. You've got it. You're fine." Everybody's got that.
If your passion is like, you know, burying people in your backyard, probably don't tell us about that.
We don't need that in our lives.
I just don't want to have, you know, have to explain things.
Yeah, your social line has still got to be there. As long as you're not hurting others,
then it's good.
You're fine. You're doing great. And I think we're going to wrap it up. I think next week we will be talking about a little place called Denver Comic Con that we may be at.
I have to go.
You have to go.
Oh, man.
That's right. I think you want to. It's fine. You got some vinyls to take care of. Oh, can I borrow some vinyls, by the way?
No.
Oh, see how quick that was?
If right, you're a Godzilla fan, let me know, because I'd love to hear about it.
Yes, come in and talk. I don't know much about wrestling anymore, but if you want to talk about 90s wrestling, we can go all day.
I was going
to
say, and so. I can participate in a lot of it. Once you get into the John Cena era,
I got up Randy to his Brock Orton. Lesnar drop. I was there.
Oh, man. Brock Lesnar was just coming in, and I was like, hey, you know, it's not as fun and cool as anymore, you know?
Right.
I mean, Chris Jericho, that's my era right there. So.
All right. Well, until then, we'll see you next time.
Later.
Bye.
Space and not a single human being.